You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
This is Napoleon Wilson. Got a smoke? Close the door. I want you to know something, Wilson. Now, I don't enjoy driving anybody to death row. You try anything. Anything. I've got two guards with shotguns, and I'll blow you apart. Sure could use a smoke.
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
This man's got nerves!
Make love in a hammock!
What?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 112 for the 11th of December, 2010. And I am David McVeigh, eventually. There we are. David McVeigh.
Sometimes, hey.
And I am joined in studio by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
iTunes is doing funny things and trying to open windows I don't want it to on your computer. But apart from that, I'm great.
That's fantastic.
Stop doing stuff.
You will continue to fight with it. And we are joined impromptu style by Celine Roberts. How are you, Celine?
Very good.
Oh. Special guest. So special, we didn't even know they were coming.
It was that exclusive. It was like a VIP only event. And like, I was the
she
only
just
person
keeps
who
showing
showed
up. Yeah. And she's just like, hey, guys. And we're like, fuck, it's Celine
like,
again.
Shit, that's Celine, fucking Celine. Man. What the fuck is she doing again?
She goes, can I be on the
show?
Right,
so
if you have to
Josh
be
standing like, behind Celine.
All right, so what is this? This is a Film Actually. This is the official movie podcast of the Geek Actually Network. This is where we talk about movies and television and other bits
stuff.
Of stuff on screen. It's where we get to get our geek on when it comes to movies. And this week we are going to get our superhero vibe on because we are going to review the new animated film Megamind 3D. Megamind, and we also are going to wind up the Walking Dead TV series. Now, we're not going to go horribly in-depth on Walking Dead because Josh and I actually were the guests on the final Talking Dead cast this week, which you'll find at MovieFanhouse.com.
And we've talked this to death.
And we've talked it to death.
Pun intended.
Whoa. But
you're dead to me.
But I thought for our audience, we should at least give our opinions on the final wrap-up of the series, which has happened, and there will be spoilers in there, so pre-warned. But that's at the end of the show. And we've got a couple of trailers, and funnily enough, both in the same kind of theme. They're both robot trailers. And so we will come to those. We also have a brand new listener-requested list of five, which is... quite frankly...
And it sparked some discussion
It sparked
well,
a
yeah.
lot of discussion, and quite frankly, it is the hardest list of five that we have ever had to deal with, because I think fundamentally we don't necessarily agree with the list. My printer has become self-aware in the studio and has decided to just do stuff. Very interesting. Hello? What are you doing?
Somebody's printing.
Somebody's communicating with the printer from beyond the grave. Anyway, we'll ignore the printer. It's kind of puttering in the background. I don't know what it's doing. But our list of five is five films that could not be remade today. And that
just,
is really...
Just stop looking at the printer.
That's really distracting. Just when you think it's finished, it starts again.
Like,
anyway, so we are going to do five films that could not be remade today. And this is actually a listener-requested list. And I'm going to read the email... which we kind of read last week, but we're going to read it again just so people know what we're dealing with
exactly.
here. And you can think about it over the course of the show. It says from Geek Betty, I'm watching Blazing Saddles for the first time since the first time at the cinema back in the day. My head is about to explode. It's clever, the talent is great, but its execution is so politically offensive to quote-unquote modern sensibilities, it could never be remade. Made me think... that a list of five classic movies that could never be remade would be interesting for what it's worth. Betty sent from her iPad. Very nice. All right. Now, so it got us thinking. We thought we will attempt this. But it's really interesting. Over the course of this last week, there's been some really heated debates.
Yeah, the more we talk about it, the more of a really tough subject it is.
It is. And we'll come back to that at the end and we'll debate it out because I've got to be honest right up the front. I only got four. And I'm sure there's more. But I only got four. And out of those four, I'm not even convinced.
No, we have five.
You have five.
As a collective.
As a collective. And my list is, I had a long talk out with my lovely wife, Katie, about it as well. And a couple of suggestions are hers. And she's got a couple of other. And there's things that you go, that would be one. And then when you start thinking about it, you go, really? Maybe not. I don't know. And we'll talk about more of this at the end. But it really is a hard one. It's really sparked a lot of conversation. But that's for later. First of all, I think we need to talk about the fact that we are going to review the new animated film from DreamWorks. Now, DreamWorks has been on a string of hits lately. Forget the Shrek films. I think they've done Shrek to death. But forget those films. But with the... with Kung Fu Panda 2 years ago now, and with How I Met Your Mother, How to Train Your Dragon earlier this
same
year. Family issues there, Josh? Are you airing your dirty
I love
laundry?
You, Mom. I'm just kidding.
And Delta Knight has said about our printer, maybe it's Skynet saying hello. A printout will pop out saying, you're dead. Anyway, nothing actually came out. I think it was just clearing its throat.
Say knock, knock, Dave.
So DreamWorks is, and I think it would be honest to say that DreamWorks is probably the closest competitor at this point in time to Pixar.
Absolutely.
In what they're doing. With the exception of Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, which I think was Fox. But that was...
That was just a one-off.
That was a one-off rarity.
They just got
lucky.
Was just,
that was brilliant. But so now we've got Megamind, which as a 3D film, first of all, we'll say is awesome because it's an animated film, so it's generated in 3D, and it really works in 3D very well. But let's bring up, we have some poster art here. Let's bring up the poster and basically run through some details. And we'll say that it's directed by Tom McGrath and written by Alan J. Schoolcraft and Brent Simons. And it stars the voice talents of Will Ferrell, Brad Pitt, Tina Fey, Jonah Hill, David Cross, Ben Stiller, and J.K. Simmons. J.K. Simmons. Legend, legend, legend. Love the man. All right, and we're going to watch the trailer here after I give you the synopsis, which will hopefully kind of explain to you that even though the synopsis I'm about to read to you is kind of spoilerish, this is the official synopsis that was on IMDb. It's actually written by the editors of IMDb. But it's not, because there's actually a little bit more to it than this. But the basic synopsis is, after a supervillain, Megamind, kills his good guy nemesis, Metro Man, he becomes bored, since there is no one left to fight. He creates a new foe, Titan, who, instead of using his powers for good, sets out to destroy the world, positioning Megamind to figure out what he's going to do with himself. Basically, that's it in a nutshell. And as I say, that sounds really spoilerish, but that's kind of just the shell that everything
is. It's really interesting because it was a really, really well thought out kind of side gag to kind of really fill the world with posters of kind of Pitt versus Pharrell, which kind of set up this kind of epic kind of backwards and forwards between these two guys, and then just to have that kind of
snatched out from under you
in like the first 5 minutes, I think everybody in our row was kind of like,
boy, how much did Brad Pitt get paid? It's like very interesting. All right, so here's the trailer. Have a look at this. Now, there's been a bunch of trailers released for Megamind.
I think none of them do it justice.
I don't either. This one is kind of funny. So this is kind of like the most common trailer around. There is actually another trailer that gives away one of the best spoilers in the film, which I thought was really odd. This one doesn't. But there is one out there that really does give it away.
I remember
the one. I thought, wow, that's really just giving everything away. But anyway, so here's Megamind, the okay trailer.
I had a fairly standard childhood.
Hurry, there isn't much time.
With parents who couldn't wait to get me out of the house.
You are destined for greatness.
That was a lot of expectation to place on an 8-day-old. Turns out another family in the Glaupunk quadrant had a very similar idea. That was the day I met Mr. Goody Two-Shoes. And our glorious rivalry was born! Our battles quickly got more elaborate.
You've fallen right into my trap.
You can't trap justice.
He would win some, I would almost win others. He took the name Metro Man. I decided to pick something a little more humble. Megamind! Incredibly handsome master of all villainy.
This November,
All right, put your hands in the air. Yeah, Metro City! You, random citizen.
The battle between good and evil. Megamind will blow your mind.
This will be the last you ever hear of Roxanne Ritchie. Huh?
Don't panic, Roxy.
I'm not panicking.
I'm on my way.
Oh, I'm shaking in my custom baby seal leather boots.
Will Ferrell. Tina Fey.
Wow, that was really exciting.
Jonah Hill.
I'd be watching you like a dingo watches a human baby.
Mm.
And Brad Pitt.
That's right.
Your plans never work. You're so predictable.
You call this predictable?
Alligators, yes. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about it on the way over.
Boom. In your face.
Juvenile.
So scary.
Seen it.
This thing behind
me. Tacky.
What's this one do?
Garish. The spider's new.
Spider? Yes, the spider. Even the smallest bite from Arachnus Deathicus will instantly paralyze. Ow! Get it off!
DreamWorks Megamind in 3D.
All right, so there's the trailer. It's making us giggle just watching the trailer. It's actually a really funny film. I think
I was surprised.
Very surprising as well.
Yeah.
I love how they're making kids' films more and more intelligent.
And interesting, rather than
just good versus evil. Like, you know, the good guy dies in, you know, the first, what, half hour of the film or something? And the rest of it's kind of more about soul searching than anything else. It was really good.
And that brings me to my first point, which is I'm going to ban from film, actually, the term kids film.
Hmm.
Because I don't think it's fair to call films kids' films anymore. I think a film is...
I think there's still a place for it, Dave.
I think there's family films.
We could go to bad films.
No, but my problem is I think the reason why we end up with so many bad kids' films is because filmmakers go, oh, it's just a kids' film.
Exactly.
Rather than going, we're making a comedy that will appeal to the whole family.
But
you know what I mean?
Children aren't stupid.
No.
I don't know where this idea has come from that we need to pander to kids because we don't.
Kids can pick up on
really, really intelligent films. I watched Alien when I was 10 and wasn't scared by it and totally understood
my
it.
My 11-year-old
really
has watched
it.
Die Hard. My
exactly.
You know, he's
like,
watched Predator.
Children,
you know,
are not stupid, and this idea that we need to pander to them and treat them like children is silly when it comes to films.
I think the fact that what you could say is it's a G-rated comedy. Yeah. Is what you could say. It's a family film. So I think this whole concept of the kiddie film or the kids... Somebody reviewed it on Twitter, actually said not bad for a kiddie film. No, that's not fair to the film.
Yeah.
You know? I would like to say, though, Dave, that there are films, and we've reviewed them before, where we think universally they're bad films, but kids will enjoy them.
Mm.
So what do
that's what I'm saying. Once again, family fair, right? I think that is actually a flaw with the film, where you say, oh, but it will appeal to kids. But I think the best films are the ones that actually appeal to everyone.
Yeah,
sure.
Appeals to the family,
you know,
as a whole. Appeals to the mom and dad.
I'm not saying ban kids film. Just the term kids film. Because I just think we look at it and go, I think it's degrading to kids films. Mm. You know, I sit there and go, Narnia could be called a kids film, or it could be called an adventure film that appeals to the family.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know,
and this is a G-rated action...
This is a comedy.
Yeah.
And Pixar's films are comedies. You know what I mean? And you look at them and go, that's what sets them apart.
Yeah.
You know, what sets them apart is that they're not just pandering to children.
Exactly.
Right? They are a film that anybody can get something out of. We went without a child. And we got just as much out of this film as when I take Nicholas to go see it tomorrow.
I was laughing like a child.
Absolutely. And when we saw Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, you know, we got just as much out of it as any kid would get. In fact, we probably got more out of it because there are jokes that will go over kids' heads.
Mm.
And that's great because it means that down the track, when they watch it again, they're going to get
they're
something
enjoy
out of
it even
again.
More, yeah.
You know? Mm. So I just think the concept of... all right, let's not ban the term, but I just think the concept where we just...
I think family films should be integrated.
Integrated. Where we dismiss it by saying, oh, it's a kid's film. You know? I don't think that's entirely fair to the film. I think there are people who won't go see Megamind because they'll go, oh, it's for kids.
Exactly.
No, go see it because even as an adult, you'll get something out of this.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, it's a comedy.
It's a comedy.
It's definitely
outright.
A comedy.
And it is the redemption of Will Ferrell. As Josh said.
Well, yeah. Look, I just despise the man. Like, with a few exceptions of when... It's kind of like whenever things start to go bad, he goes back and does that, like, impromptu comedy, that very sort of SNL style that he used to have. And when he does that, I love him again because it's just like that's what he does well is that kind of character instead of just him doing kind of stand-up in a film, which is what he does a lot
Will
of the time.
Will Ferrell playing a character rather than Will Ferrell playing Will Ferrell?
Will Ferrell. Well, more than that, because it also comes down to the way that he delivers lines. It's not just him sort of like playing a Will Ferrell character. There's also this whole kind of like his stand-up and just the way that he is that whole, oh my God, I'm explaining exactly what's happening.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
it's real. I cannot stand that. It's not funny. It's a joke that we all know is coming and it is in everything he does. Whereas this, it's kind of, he's under really heavy direction and like he has to define himself as a character because Will Ferrell's face isn't there.
And it's interesting. I've said that for a long time about a lot of comedians. When comedians are controlled by somebody who knows what they're doing, comedians are an awesome force.
Yeah. But when comedians have to act rather than
that's
just
right.
Be
and if exactly. you look at, if you look at it as an example, Eddie Murphy's early career, when you look at him in Trading Places and in the first Beverly Hills Cop, this man over 48 Hours, this man was sharp as a tack. Yeah. He was under control. He was allowed to riff at times, but most of the time kept on book. When Eddie Murphy got power and actually started to produce his own stuff, it was all about the improv. Yeah. It was all about Eddie being Eddie and let him do his thing. And he was never
Eddie
as sharp.
Eddie being the comedian, not Eddie being the actor.
That's right.
Exactly. And this is why we come back to the same
And
then
we come
thing.
Back to this one, which is Will Ferrell is controlled. And when he is controlled and focused, he is very funny. And he does a really good job. And Tina Fey the same. Tina Fey is very controlled.
I kept on trying to pick who it was because I didn't... No, I couldn't remember who played the chick, but again, fantastic job.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
Really
and Tina Fey doesn't
acting.
Sound like
Except
Tina Fey.
Except if Tina Fey ever drops anything about gangster or any black comedy again, I'll hunt her down and kill her. It's not funny. It wasn't funny in the line. It's just a groaner. Like, it doesn't even make sense.
All right, but speaking of groaners, we also had Jonah Hill saying, I keep watching you like an adult, like a dingo keeps watching a human baby. That fell flat, too. You know?
But it was successfully creepy.
Yes.
So
He played creepy very well.
But then again, I think that Jonah Hill's kind of a creepy character anyway, quite frankly. But let's go back to the film as a whole and basically say the film as a whole is a ride. It's so much fun. And something I said to you when we came out, which was, I hope Zack Snyder is watching this film. Yeah. Because when he makes Superman, that's what I want to see Superman do. The flying superheroic stuff, when he's flying through and weaving in and out of the buildings and the shots that were chosen for that.
Oh,
and
the idea giant of just damage.
Ripping
like,
the tops of buildings off and throwing buildings at each other. You just look and go, that's Superman.
Exactly. Yeah. We want to see the city get trashed.
Absolutely. And all I can think is with today's technology, there is no reason we can't make Superman do that. Mm.
There's no way we can't make Superman badass. And that's all I'm asking you to do. It doesn't have to be over a city. Hell, it can be in space. Throw planets at each other. I don't give a shit. Just make sure you're throwing stuff at each other and beating the crap out of each other in ways that aren't humanly possible.
Yes.
And if we don't make that definition, then it's just going to be another wasted
Superman
film.
And all I can say
Superman
is,
film.
Let's bring either... what's the apocalypse guy? Darkseid? Let's bring Darkseid or let's bring Zod into the new movie where somebody of equal power and they can wail on each other. That's what we want to see. Yeah. No more Lex Luthor. Bored of Lex Luthor. Yeah. It's done. It's been done
outdated.
To death. Move on. We don't want human opponents. We don't want bullets hitting eyeballs. We want buildings being thrown at each other.
What about Bizarro?
Bizarro would be good too. Do reverse of all earthly things. Yes, absolutely. Bizarro would be good. Brainiac. Yeah. Would be good. Let's bring in one of these superpower baddies and let's really wail on each other, you know?
If I see Lex Luthor, other than a small cameo, fuck it.
Yeah, look, if they want to go with the storyline where Lex Luthor runs for president and all that sort of stuff in the background, fine, do all that in the background, but that's not the person Superman wails on.
Yeah.
Should
we get back to Megamind?
Why?
We've said it's great. Let's
it's
move
great.
On.
Let's move on.
Okay,
look,
it was awesome.
Megamind, look, great
10 out of 10.
Great sense of humor.
To anyone.
Great sense of humor. Great animation. I think it was you that came out and said the water effects.
Dust effects.
Dust, water, particle simulations.
Yeah, amazing.
Wow.
Even just buildings crashing into buildings and things
effects.
Being ripped off, it just worked really, really well. And
Some of the best CG put on screen for a long time.
And fantastic.
Until Pixar comes out and ups the game one more time, which is what they always do.
Yeah.
But for the since the last one, this is just a step in the right direction.
And though it may be incredibly cliche... Fucking great soundtrack.
Yeah.
It's just
fantastic.
Like every single one of those tracks is just gold.
The only track that didn't work for me when it first came on, but I actually, it grew on me, was when Michael Jackson came on at the end. It's the only track where I kind of went,
They all
danced at the end. It's sort of, that's cool, it's fun. Yeah.
And as I say, it kind of grows on you once you get over the initial shock that that's coming
that
on.
They're dancing.
Yeah, and, sort of, but you kind of go, all right, well, that's kind of cute. Let it ride. You know what I mean? And that's fine.
If I was 10, I'd be like, but I'm not, so.
Yes.
Yeah.
But 10-year-olds will get a lot out of that. I think they'll get more out of
that. It's a very intelligent film.
Mm.
It definitely. Is. It is. Surprising.
I think people of all ages can enjoy this movie.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, look, it's one of those films where it doesn't really need that much depth. You've just got to go and see it. It's a visual spectacular, and what's in between the visual giant feasts that you're going to get is really solid and really grounded and really well done. So I just think, as a whole, the film's great.
Absolutely. Yeah. We'll minor spoilers here. I mean, we're not going to go into huge spoilers here because we don't want to give anything away. But I will just say that Will Ferrell's impersonation of Marlon Brando is quite frankly brilliant.
When
it just gets more and more out of hand. It gets to the point where you can't understand a thing he is saying. He's just mumbling
it is
and
just
spitting
genius.
Everywhere.
So I will say that, definitely worth the price of admission. And do see it in 3D because the 3D is spectacular. Yeah. 3D is one of those things we're kind of hit and miss on at the moment. But as far as 3D animated films go, I don't think we've seen a miss yet.
No.
Because let's face it, that medium is born for it.
Yeah.
It's made for it. You know, you sit there and they can actually animate the hell out of that thing, and then because they've got full control of the environment, they don't have to worry about cumbersome 3D cameras.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would like to just say that this is one of those films that if you're going to pick something for next year that you're going to do a sequel for, I can actually see this working. I'm sorry, it's just to see his exploits, and again, you know, we won't go into spoiler territory, but with his new career path would be just as funny, I reckon, than actually.
Yeah, and they've left things open for that as well.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So there's a part of me that kind of goes, look, if you're going to pick one of the ones that you've done over the last few years and do a sequel, please make it this one.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like DreamWorks is now doing the Kung Fu Panda 2 sequel, and I go, I don't really need a sequel to Kung Fu Panda.
It doesn't, you know? Like, I mean, they did that, and they kind of did the sequel with the Furious 5 or whatever it was, like the little...
And they've done they did a sequel to Madagascar, which was another one which I didn't think needed a sequel. Yeah. It was finished.
Whatever happened with The Incredibles? Because that was set up for a sequel.
Well, funnily enough, Pixar, with the exception of Toy Story, because Toy Story was kind of like this ongoing franchise, but with the exception of that, they'd never done a sequel before. That wasn't their thing. They told one-off stories and they moved on. But now we've got Cars 2 coming out. Now, the other thing to remember about The Incredibles is that it's actually not Pixar's film.
Yeah.
Mm. Pixar produced it, but it was brought to them by Brad Bird.
Mm. Oh.
So it's really Brad Bird's film
that
Pixar put together for him. And Brad Bird is now off doing Mission Impossible.
Mm.
So whether or not Brad Bird is going to come back and ever do another animated film now that he's moved into live action.
Seems a bit too late anyway.
Yeah, and it's like, and the cast has moved on, and you know, it's like, and The Incredibles, I love.
And
I
we've had so many brilliant animated films come out after that as well. It would have a lot to live up to.
We should hold judgment, especially until we see like how well Cars 2 does, because maybe this is a company that should just avoid sequels. Like, one thing that we love about Pixar is the fact that every time they bring us a film, it's unique
and the one thing I will say, though, is that their history with sequels so far has been remarkable, because the Toy Story trilogy has been a remarkable success story. Because not only has each one made consecutively more money than the last one, but they've also gotten rave reviews on each one. So they've done very well putting this together.
The only thing that I worry is that, Toy Story was their exception, because Toy Story was kind of the thing that defined them, so they needed to kind of finish that, and it really doesn't finish in the first film. It needs to be kind of talked out, and it needs to kind of have its circle completed. But I worry that the company could end up becoming like the Final Fantasy franchise, where they were fine until they started doing these side paths, where they'd be like,
let's take this and
make a couple more of this, and the second you stray from the path of being be creative in every one that you make.
Cars 2 worries me, quite frankly, because Cars... visually fantastic. I mean, the first Cars film, the animation was second to none at that time. I mean, the texturing on it, the lighting, just the animation was stunning. Mm. But unfortunately, it kind of went against what Pixar was famous for, which was making films that appealed to everyone. Because Cars really did appeal to a slightly younger demographic, and it had some funny stuff, but it was younger.
Yeah.
What worries me is that John Lasseter, who is the head of Pixar, it's his film. So John Lasseter directed Cars, and he's coming back for Cars 2, and it really is his baby. He's obsessed by these car characters. Mm. And I'm worried that his obsession with this is going to be a bit of a downer for Pixar, because Pixar every year ups the ante, and I'm sure the animation will be stunning, but I don't know if we need a sequel to Cars, you know?
Well, look, I mean, Pixar has this real ability to kind of take whatever it might be, whatever subject that they want, whether it be a small, middle thing or something, and really give it life. Whereas Cars, even by design, force you to have this particular shape.
And there's a restriction,
Exactly, and you end up with, like, faced sort of shapes, and you don't get to elaborate on the depth. You can't connect as well at them because
they're inanimate objects.
Well, yeah.
Exactly. And the thing is, even, and you could argue argue that toys are inanimate objects, or Wall-E is an inanimate object, but you look at them and go, they've given them life,
but
because there's a certain...
It almost feels like no one else in the department is into Cars as he is.
Yeah.
I've always held
that.
But
also, like, Cars is something that not everyone is that into. Like, there are some people who is like, my car is my baby, and they're really in love with their cars. We've all had toys as children. We can all relate to that as human beings, because we've all been given teddy bears or toys or whatever as kids, and had a connection with them. And as a child, your connection with your toys, they're your friends.
Yeah, and even though Wall-E is a robot,
yeah,
and the first 40 minutes of Wall-E is just him on the planet, it's an amazing
He's
sequence.
Very lovable looking.
We do have humans that come into it.
Mm.
We do change it up.
But also, you know, even his design, it's very cutesy.
That's right, it's very E.T. in many ways.
Yeah, it's very cute,
exactly.
Very easy to look at, very easy to love.
A car
is a car. If you're not a car fanatic, then it's just a car.
Exactly.
I would also like to say that... possibly not really E.T. I would actually go more Short Circuit Johnny Five, actually.
Which one in itself was kind of spawned from E.T. That whole idea of the weird shaped head and it's kind of in the, you know.
Man, I want to watch Short Circuit now.
Short Circuit's great. We're completely straight off of regular. Because look, there's nothing negative to say about this film.
Exactly.
This film was
great.
A lot of
go
fun.
Go see it.
It's worth the money. It's worth the price of admission.
Yep.
Go see it. If you've got kids,
go and see it in
3D
as well.
Go see it in 3D. Buy it on DVD. Give it to your friends.
Absolutely.
Tell your friends about it. It's awesome.
I'd go as far as most of those, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to be out for a while on DVD, but let's go to the cinema.
Go to the cinema and see it right now.
It's definitely worth seeing at the cinema. Yeah.
Delta Knight in our chat room says, Short Circuit is my favorite movie. Is my favorite movie ever. Okay. And Numero Zero said, Cars did seem wrapped up and done, which is exactly right. It feels wrapped up and done. So what are they doing for the sequel? Spy movie. Mm. What? Anyway, all right, moving on. Let's move on out of here and just say, go see Megamind. It's worth seeing. End of story. Now, all right. Now, I've got two trailers and a couple of little bits that I just want to run through really quickly because we want to get to The Walking Dead. But first of all, before we do the trailer for this first one, I just want to say the rumors of David O. Russell not directing Uncharted, which... we speculated with Charlie and Jesse when we were doing the Talking Dead cast, are not necessarily true. An article came out that basically said David O. Russell has picked up another project, and he is doing it first, and it's going to probably be... And so Uncharted will probably be delayed a year, okay? But there is nothing in that rumor that says he's not doing Uncharted, okay? And this is a bummer, because we were hoping that if he's out, that means that Mark Wahlberg is also out. But at this point, he is doing another project first. Uncharted will be pushed back a year. Whether or not Sony's going to win and wait a year is a whole different issue, and we'll keep our eyes on what's going on. But at this point, he is still signed to do Uncharted. Okay, so let's put an end to that rumor right now. Secondly, I love the first one. I hated the second one. So this is the tiebreaker, guys. Mm. And the first teaser for Transformers 3 came out this week. So this is not a full trailer. This is just a teaser.
It's got Megan Fox.
No, Megan Fox is not in it.
She walked.
It's got the Victoria's Secret model in it now. But we don't see her in this. This is just a teaser to get you in the mood. It's called Transformers Dark Side of the Moon. And jury is out.
Looking good, over.
Ready to go?
now have had confirmation of loss of signal from Apollo 11. Apollo 11 is on the far side of the moon.
Neil, you are dark on the rock.
Mission is a go. They have 21 minutes.
Been breached.
Extensive damage.
No signs of life or movement control.
Take photos and samples and get them safe home.
You cannot believe what we're seeing.
We are not alone after all, are we?
No, sir. We are not alone.
Okay, so...
well, that was that.
That's that. And as I say, I love the first... I unapologetically loved the first Transformers. I thought the first Transformers was a hoot.
Absolutely.
A hoot. Hated with a passion, the second one.
Mm. It just felt so cold.
So cold. It had so no cold.
Heart
at all. No heart.
And it tried to have heart, and it just really didn't.
Fell flat completely.
Yeah.
So this is the tiebreaker. This is to see if they can redeem themselves. Mm. Now this is the film.
This one looks like this one's going to be really serious and epic.
Well, I'm not. I'm in for that. That's fine.
Yeah, like I'm more into that than I was the concept of like human robots and crazy freaking... Everything about two...
Black
just,
stereotype robots.
Yeah! I wonder... we've been promised that they're not back, but then...
I certainly hope
but
so.
But then the cars that they turn into were spotted on set, so whether or not Michael Bay is just a freaking liar or not, who knows?
Or whether they're going to make a joke at its expense.
Maybe, who knows? I don't know. That's the problem, is that I don't trust anything that comes out of these people at this moment, because the second one hurt so bad. I mean, hurt so bad.
Yeah.
After striking so well with the first one, the second one was like, wow, you just took us completely for granted.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I'm curious. I'm curious. We'll see what it is. The whole concept of this dark side of the moon, I mean, in part two, we saw that that's where the old one was living on the dark side of the moon. So whether this is prequeling it or I don't know what they're doing. I don't know. But, you know, Shia LaBeouf did apologize for part two and said that this one was a much better one. So I don't know if I trust him either.
No, didn't he apologize for like everything that he sucked in lately?
Yeah, pretty much. He apologized for Indiana Jones. He apologized for Transformers. It's like, way to go, dude. Way to stand by your films.
No, fuck it. I give more respect for not. It's like, make yourself an entity. Stand up and be like, hey, look, they were shit.
Way to make yourself loved by executive producers.
You know what? But like, the guy gets like fan support in my eyes from people like me that sit there and go, ballsy, dude. All right.
Ballsy.
Fair enough.
No, I thought that on the first apology. On the second apology, I thought, now you're whining. Yeah. It's like, okay, third thing I want to talk about really quickly is last week we talked about Peter Jackson buying up 30 Epic Reds to shoot Hobbit in 3D, which was really exciting. We just found out that the new Spider-Man reboot started shooting last week. Mm-hmm. And what are they shooting on?
I think that they cast
Epic
Mary Jane
Reds.
As well.
They're shooting on Epic Reds in 3D. Oh. So it is actually being shot 3D in Epic Reds. So Epic Reds seems to be the way to go for filmmakers at the moment. Mm. They're all very excited by this camera. So we'll see what happens with that. Yes, Emma Stone has been cast as Gwen, and I saw a photo of her with blonde hair.
Oh, sorry, not Mary Jane, Gwen, yeah.
Gwen, no Mary Jane in this one. And she looks fantastic. And apparently she's a natural blonde, and she said that she's been a redhead for so long that when she dyed her hair for the role, she looked in the mirror and went, oh, hello, I haven't seen you in a while. So I thought that was very cute as well. And now we have one more trailer, once again, following that robot motif. Mm. We have talked about this film. We have bagged this film. We have said what a stupid idea this film is. And now we can finally have a look at it. This is, if you remember, going back almost a year ago, we talked about the fact that they were making a movie out of Rock'em Sock'em Robots. You know, the old fighting robot game?
Oh, yeah!
Here's the trailer for Real Steel.
Charlie Kenton is in the house!
The one and only.
Times have changed. Fighting has changed. But the crowd, they never change.
Our main event tonight features pain!
They just get bigger. The human body can only take so much. But the steel never stops.
This is what it's all about! Let's make some money!
All right, Josh, what do you think?
It's like what would happen if somebody actually took the robots with the little saw blades and stuff seriously.
Yeah.
Which we have all tried to ignore quite successfully and managed to do that.
We've managed to segregate those people out of society.
Out of society.
And now we're bringing them back.
We've left them in their basements and let them fight out. But apparently this is going to go. You know, when I actually heard the project, because this only came out recently, just when some people had first seen the trailer, to me, was the concept that this was a serious film and that we were actually doing it this way. I immediately thought of a game from, God, I don't know, about 8 years ago called One Must Fall. Now, One Must Fall was the concept of exactly the same thing, but people were inside the robots. This had a really deep storyline because the concept behind it was that people died inside these robots and there were people that had, like, broken arms or lost limbs because, you know, if you lost a limb, the arm would come off with it kind of thing. And it's like, I was like, maybe that's what they're going to do. And now that I've seen that they're not in the robots, I'm like, all right, okay, now I'm not interested again. So
I have to say, there is an allure to seeing big fucking robots belting on each other, which is always kind of fun.
Exactly.
You know, well, like, look, I mean, if you can give us
fighting, it's fun. You know, we get to watch shit break other shit, whether it's humans breaking arms other humans, but robots breaking other robots. It's still fun.
But I want to say, if that can do half what I wanted out of Transformers 2, I'm in. So,
yeah, and so like, and I look at it and go, you know, Hugh Jackman is actually a good performer, Wolverine notwithstanding. But you know, movie,
he wasn't the one that bothered me about the
movie. Actually, he wasn't the problem with Wolverine. It was everything else. But you know, Hugh Jackman is actually fun, and you know, he can perform, and you know, he's kind of playing.
Okay, 1993. I just got corrected on the One Must Fall.
Oh, well, there you go.
Time.
But you know, it's as close as we're going to get at this point to, as somebody's pointed out in the chat room, a Mech Warrior film. Mm. You know, and it's still not clear to me whether or not it's actually matching the moves of somebody. So is somebody actually fighting off? You know,
yeah, it actually. You know.
Yeah, so it looks like he's controlling the fight, you know? I'm curious.
Oh, no. Actually, it shows him training it, so maybe the robot does.
Maybe it's self-aware.
Human fighting, human boxing has been outlawed. He's an ex-boxer. I read a thing about it.
So he trains
the
robot.
He's an ex-boxer who decides to train robots. So I don't think anyone's controlling them. He's training the robots. That's the thing.
God.
The thing that I read.
That kind of takes...
Yeah, that's why I looked a bit disappointed after this trailer, because I've read the plot synopsis, and it sounds quite tacky.
I do like the delivery of the line where he says, "Let's make some money!" Look, and the other problem we have with this film is it's directed by Sean Levy. Now, Sean Levy is the man who brought us some particular trash in the past. So, he brought us Get Smart. Let's not forget that. So, so we look at it and go, you know, I don't know. It looks different to what he normally does, though. So, you know, look, jury's out. We'll wait till more trailers come out. We'll wait. It doesn't come out till summer next year. So, you know, there will be more material out on it. The next trailer, of course, that we're going to be waiting for with bated breath, I'm sure, is the Battleship movie. So, you know, that is in production, so we will probably see some stuff on that soon. There are also trailer descriptions kicking around on the net now for Thor. It looks like they're holding Thor's trailer to release with Tron. So it looks like the trailer is about to hit.
Some set photos have hit the net as well.
But from what I've read, the trailer is just a cut down of the 4 minutes that was shown at Comic-Con. So it doesn't really show anything new. So don't get too excited about that. Okay.
Oh, I won't.
I'm not too excited about... Funny, I just cannot get excited about Thor. And I love Thor as a character. I just can't.
I feel like they haven't excited me enough yet. They've gone, we've got these actors, and I've gone, cool. Yeah. And they've gone, and we've got these costumes, and I've gone, cool. They've gone, and look at these set photos. And I'm like, okay, you want to give me something to work off
but
here?
See, that's the problem, is that I was much more excited about the project when they gave me the actors' names. They told me who was behind it. I'm thinking, this is really epic. And then I saw that footage, and I saw the photos. And since I've seen the photos, and I've seen that Comic-Con footage, I'm no longer excited.
I think it looks a little plastic.
It does. It looks a little plastic. Yeah. It looks a little fake.
I don't know if they... maybe they're going to put on After Effects or something. I can't... You know, I don't know.
Maybe I don't know. Hopefully, look, after they color correct it and everything down and it looks different and they paste it up and put music behind it and...
It'll look really nice.
And it'll look fantastic. But at the moment, really nice, I'm just not that excited. It's funny. I'm much more excited about the Avengers movie. I'm actually more excited about Captain America, frankly.
You know? And also, I feel like there hasn't been that much of a build-up to Thor either. It's like, we got the hammer at the end of Iron Man. But as a character... I've read quite a bit of Thor, you know, graphic novels and stuff. I prefer people like Tony Stark. They're funny. They're cute. They're humorous. Thor is very, I am Thor. I am Thor, damn it.
Well, it looks like they're focusing a lot on... It looks like they're focusing a lot on the Blake side.
Yeah, like, are they doing more of his alter ego character rather than him?
Which I have a problem with as well, because in the comic book, when Thor becomes Blake, it's actually a different person.
Yeah.
It's not Thor. And it looks like...
I forget what his name is,
the Australian boy, but it looks like he's playing both characters. So it looks like Thor on Earth. It doesn't look like Blake, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm just not sure. I'm waiting to find out more.
Yeah, it has interesting history, but I
trust Marvel. Marvel hasn't really let me down yet.
Totally.
When they're producing, you know? When they're behind it, they haven't really let me down yet. Mm. Fox producing is a whole different issue, but with Marvel producing, the Iron Man films were, you know, the second one wasn't as good as the first, but it was still a fun film.
Iron Man 2 was still awesome.
Yeah, it was still awesome. I still enjoyed it a lot, you know? And so I am hoping, and you know, Joss Whedon doing the Avengers, come on, we couldn't ask for anyone better at this point. So, I'm hoping. Mm. It's all about hope at this point.
Yes, very much.
Okay, let's move on from that, though, and let's, before we get onto our lists, which is going to be a very interesting experiment, let's just talk about the Walking Dead TV series. Now, for our Australian listeners, I do apologize for this because it hasn't aired in Australia yet. Mm-hmm. There are ways of getting it. It is on various American servers, and figure out your proxy servers and stuff, and you can actually find it on things like Hulu and stuff like that, but you're going to have to do some playing around because... For some reason in Australia, they won't even give us a release date. This, in my opinion, is a massive mistake. This is a film that, with a show that has got such a high geek rating of all shows on television right now that geeks will do anything to get it.
Mm. Yeah, well, you've got to remember this is the same country that won't get an R18 rating, so they just end up with the whole country downloading stuff. It's like both sides have just accepted.
Two countries in particular which have the highest rates of BitTorrent traffic on television content are Canada and Australia. Mm. And the reason is because they keep holding stuff back on us. Now, as I say, on a normal television show, on something like House or something like that, probably wouldn't matter so much because people will sometimes wait for it, what have you. But if you're going to put out something that has got the geek factor as Walking Dead,
geek fans,
they are going to get
it. You have
it
to give us a date, at least.
Yeah. Give us a date, or do what they do with Battlestar Galactica and feed it basically via satellite.
Yeah.
Bring it over straight away. Or what's going to happen is when it finally hits TV in this country, nobody will watch it because everybody's seen it.
Yeah.
You know? And that's the problem is everybody will have seen it. And then they'll say, oh, see, it just doesn't work. That's why we relegate this stuff to 11 o'clock. Yeah. It only wouldn't work because people have already seen it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? It's like to do something about it. So Australian programmers, that's my message to you. First of all, let's have a quick look at this. This is a promo, the spot that was shown on TV for The Walking Dead. For those who have been living under a rock and don't know what The Walking Dead is.
Or don't watch this show.
Here's a little promo spot for you. This is only about a minute, so it shouldn't be too long.
Coming to AMC. From the director of The Shawshank Redemption. And the producer of The Terminator.
Things are different now. There's us and the dead. We survived this by pulling together, not apart.
We ought to warn people away from the city.
Folks got no idea what they're getting into.
We're on our own. Up to us to find a way out.
Don't you get bit.
We're dead. All of us.
All I am anymore is a man looking for his wife and son.
Dead. Series premiere Halloween on AMC. Telling the best original stories on TV.
Okay, interesting TV spot, actually, because it actually shows clips from probably the first three episodes in there. So, so interesting TV spot. Anyway, the last episode aired last week. Six episodes is the first season. They finally finished it off, and it sparked a lot of debate. Josh and I and Celine have all had long conversations about this. We're not going to go into huge, great detail because we do have lists to do and we've got to get our show finished. And as I say, we did do the Talking Dead cast last week, which should be online any day now, with the Movie Fan House guys. And you can actually hear a lot of our opinions on there. We'll just wrap this up really quickly and basically say my opinions on it were, I thought that it started incredibly strong. I thought the pilot episode was just brilliant. And I actually was disappointed by the end. And I've spoke about this in great detail, where I actually felt that by the last episode, we've strayed so far from being The Walking Dead now that it's just another zombie show. And it's not The Walking Dead anymore, as we know it, as the comic book. That being said, as a TV series without the comic book, you go, it's actually a fairly well done TV show. It's not bad. I don't think it's a perfect TV show, and it's got a lot of problems, but it's not bad. And would it bring me back for a second season? I'm not as excited as some, but I will come back and watch it. Your guys?
You go first.
I agree with Dave on that. We have talked, we've almost talked this to death outside of this show, so it's kind of hard.
So you guys are kind of getting it.
It's kind of hard to, it's kind of hard to talk about it again, but I agree that the first episode did start off very strong. It was very true to the comic. I don't have an issue when people want to deviate from their source material. They can go ahead, they can do that, just do it well. And I think there were episodes, particularly for me, episode 4 and episode 5, it's a 6-episode series, where I really felt that they were wasting precious time on attempting to develop characters and not developing them well. I had a few little niggly issues with small things, but I'm just really anal about small things in TV series when a lot of people aren't. I definitely think episode 6 redeemed the series. It's a really different from, I mean, plot-wise, quite different from the comic book, but they leave it in a place where you could go back to the comic book in series 2 if they choose to do that. If they don't choose to do that, fine, but overall with the series, I'm a little like, because there was a really good episodes and then really bad episodes and then a redeeming one at the end, I'm sort of, when I look at the series as a whole so far, I kind of go, it was okay.
Yeah.
I'm not like, oh my God, I can't wait for series 2. Like, I'll definitely watch series 2, but was very disappointed with episode 4 and 5. 6 redeemed the series, but why should it need a redeeming last episode?
I just want to address something in the chat room very quickly, which is somebody saying that we don't just have 4 channels that could go to Foxtel, basically, which is our cable. And somebody saying, but what if you don't want to pay for Foxtel? What if you don't want or can't afford to pay for cable? Let's not forget that The Walking Dead is made for cable. It's basic cable. So even in America, it was a paid-for television show. So the fact that it would come to cable television in this country doesn't offend me in any way. It is made for a cable channel.
Yeah.
All right? It's not made to be a free-to-air show.
Yeah, it's not the kind of source material you'd want to put on free-to-air TV as well, even though they have toned it down considerably. The comics are fucking brutal at points, and I can really understand why they've chosen to deviate from them. They are very, very intense. Like, it deals with rape and torture and murder and all the kinds of really horrible things that humans do to each other. So I can see why they've deviated from it, but it's still not suitable for your 6 o'clock time slot or something on free.
No, but even in America, it's showing it, I think, 11 o'clock at night. Yeah. It is a late night cable television
show. Yeah, but it's a cable television show, so expect a cable television show.
Absolutely. Josh. Yeah.
I disagree with both of you.
And that's why we love you, Josh.
But only to the extent where I said, look, I agree entirely with the middle parts of your conversation. I think, look, 4 wasn't a great episode. I don't hate it as much as you guys did, because at that stage I had kind of really gone, I don't feel
you
this is...
You kind of accepted that it
deviated. I just accepted that they had deviated, whereas you guys kind of...
I was still trying to hold onto the threads that it might still follow the comics.
Exactly.
That's
you
why,
guys, by 5, were kind of going, this has just lost it, and so on and so forth. And I respect that you know, concept. You guys wanted something, and you didn't get that. As a TV series, when you get to episode 6, I feel that, Celine's right. It is a redemption, a slight redemption. And as I said on the Talking Dead cast, it's like they've got about 2 to 3 episodes to pull me back in to get me really excited. Ooh. At the moment, I kind of sit halfway. I think that as a series, if they go the direction I have in my mind, I have a lot of hope for it. If they don't, then it will fall apart. It walks on fine ground, and it ends at a kind of sort of a ballsy finish to just stop it and just be like, they have no direction, where are they going to go from here? And just to leave it with that, it's like if your viewers aren't interested, you've lost everyone at that point.
Yeah. Do you know one of the reasons why I think the adaptation, as an adaptation of the comic book, why it pisses me off so much? And I think the reason it pisses me off so much is because it starts so faithful to the comic. If they had decided to do their own thing from the beginning and basically say, we're going to follow, you know, he wakes up in a hospital and, you know, whatever, but we're kind of doing our own thing here, you know what I mean? Then we would have gone, okay, this is a loose adaptation. We're moving off in a completely different direction.
And
this
and that.
Well, the fact that the first issue was so true.
The first episode is the only one that's really...
Absolutely, and that's
yeah. No. But what I'm saying is that
the first episode was the best episode, and it was exactly, the episode that was closest to the comics.
But that in itself was, to me, a statement from Frank Darabont going, "This is the setup for what The Walking Dead was." Right, the whole episode in itself is kind of like a small movie. It is a pilot episode because it's got that really kind of like it's talking about how it's about the humans dealing with their losses and dealing with what they have to do. It sets up him as a character very similar to the way it was in the thing, and from there they just took it in their own direction.
Or alternatively, you could look at the counter argument to that, which is Frank Darabont says, look at this, look how faithful we can be to the comic book, get you sucked in, and then go, fuck you. It's like, you know, I'm not saying that he did that on purpose, but
I think that's exactly what you're saying.
No, what I'm saying is that he basically sets it up. I don't think we're saying, at no point did I get from that series, look, this is a starting point, we're being really faithful so we can go off in our own direction. What I got from that series was watching that first episode, that movie length adaptation was, wow, they're going to get it right. They're doing it so well. They're going to get this right. We're right on the money.
And then episode two, you go.
Okay, there's elements here, but who are those people? And we're starting to move off into a different direction. And then you get to episode three, and you go, wait a minute, we're even further. And we got the Vatos, and you know what the hell's going. And then we get to episode four, and we go, wait, we are just gone at this point. And you sit there and go, it's just a bizarre thing to do for me to set it up so faithfully. And then to move so far off. I didn't get the fact that he's... once again, everything is personal opinion, and Josh got what he got from it, but I didn't get personally that he's saying, here's our setup, now we can go off in our own direction. I didn't get that. I got, look how faithful and beautiful we are being to this, and then we just move off in a different direction. And I didn't understand why he would choose to do that. For somebody who claims to have loved the series so much... Why would you veer away from the series? What made you take on that project in the first place was the fact that you loved these characters, you love this storyline, you want to put this on screen. Yes, you make adaptational changes, but you still stick with the basic story, the basic concept of what's going on. You've got tons of source material to mine. You don't need to make up your own source material.
Yeah.
When you've got that much...
I think it's not like it's not allowed. I mean...
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean... Josh mentioned a while ago, you know, when we were talking about this, that like an adaptation of a book or an adaptation, a remake of a film or something, is you can take the source material and you can alter it and you can change the plot. I think it just is bizarre that the first episode was that faithful and then moved away very quickly and very subtly.
And there are elements in episode 2 and episode 3, there are elements from the comic book.
Yeah.
And every now and again they start to bring it back, like when they cut up the body and they wear the guts, right? And you sit and go, that's in the comic book, I remember that part, you know? And where they're going for to try and get the truck, I remember that, you know? It's like, but then there are other stuff that isn't in there, you know? And so, and that's fine. And as I say, episode 2 didn't even bother me because you go, okay, oh, we've established we're adding some more characters, we've established we're doing something slightly differently. But it just got further and further and further away as the series progressed. So by the time you get to episode 4 and 5, we are in no man's land now. We are no longer on book.
Yeah.
And when you get to that sort of situation, this is the argument that goes backwards and forwards constantly, but you get to a point where, when does it become no longer an adaptation of the source material?
I just want to quickly talk about something that was mentioned in the chat room. I think Delta said, why watch a remake of a comic if you can just read the comics? I agree with that.
Why watch a movie based on a book if you can just read the book?
Exactly, I agree with that. But then at the same time,
when you look at... a lot of times when you read a book, it won't be 100% to the film.
The best adaptations out there are the...
Sorry.
I'll let you finish. The best adaptations of the books to films that are out there are the ones that keep to the core elements.
I think that's one aspect of it. It doesn't always happen that way.
Because as an example, you brought up Harry Potter when we did the other show. And Harry Potter is a great example. I've read all the books and I've seen all the movies. Yes, they take liberties. Mm. But the basic story elements of those Harry Potter books are still in the films. Yeah, that's why they are recognizable.
That's one example.
You look at some of the great adaptations out there.
There are adaptations which take a book and completely change the ending, and sometimes those are really great films. I'm just saying. I think, like, I can't win this argument. I've tried to talk to you guys about this, but look.
Well, it's not an argument. It's an opinion, and that's the thing. We look at it and we go,
Because, like, you're basically saying that the possibility of them taking this way is just not acceptable.
I look at it and go, no, I'm just saying from my personal opinion, I look at it and go, I'm not that excited. Yeah. I'm not as excited about The Walking Dead now as I was 6 months ago.
Exactly. But you know? I mean, I'm not that excited about the series. It was an okay
Because now
series,
I look at it and go, it's a zombie series, but it's not The Walking Dead anymore. Mm. It's not The Walking Dead that I read and they promised me was being put on screen.
What I was going to say actually before when Delta said, why bother watching an adaptation of a comic when you can just read the comic. I think of films, this is different to making a TV series, yes, I understand that, but films like Kick-Ass or films like Sin City, where it's literally shot for shot, dialogue for dialogue, that are really successful.
Yeah, and Kick-Ass does make some strong liberties.
I personally, as someone who's read all of the...
No, they do more than the strong liberties, man. They completely change the whole ending.
They changed the ending, but they didn't change core elements throughout. It was still recognizable as Kick-Ass. All the way through that film, you sat there going, there's elements of this book, and they kept the core idea of that book. They changed the ending, but also Kick-Ass is also in a slightly different category, which is that they were writing a film and a book at the same time.
Yeah, true.
They didn't have an ending at the time that they were writing a script.
Sin City is one example. As someone who has read all of the Sin Cities and several times and is a massive Sin City fan, I think the films were very, very true to the comics and I still enjoyed them. It doesn't mean I sit down and go, why would I want to watch a faithful adaptation to Sin City when I can read the comics? It was still a really enjoyable experience. And I think you can take it either way. You can deviate really heavily or you can stick really true to it or you can
I think no matter which side, I think that the underlying thing I've been trying to say the whole time is exactly what Octane's put, and I think you cannot say it better, which is that it has to stand on its own.
Right. Yeah, it has and to be strong enough to stand on its own. Exactly.
Is the fact that at this stage it sits slightly higher than zero to me. So as a series, did the series fail or not fail, out of everything that they're currently running on TV right now, it's still something that I enjoyed more than I didn't enjoy.
I agree.
Because I let go of that fact and I went, look, I'm going to watch each episode based on itself and I'm going to enjoy it as a TV series and see if it wins me. And I've got to the end and I'm above zero. And like I've said, if it wins me in the second series by continuing along this path, I still think, even if it has deviated the way it's done, if they keep bringing out plot points, if they keep going to locations, or if they keep hitting points that they cover in the comic book, then they are doing an adaption. Whether or not they're doing it as faithfully as you guys want to is something between your own opinions, and I understand that. What I'm saying is that I think we should be reviewing it as a series, not as an adaption.
That's why I said at the beginning, the series itself was okay. As a series as a whole, whether it's an adaption or not, I enjoyed it. But there were points where I think it really lagged acting-wise, characterized, story plot-wise, regardless of whether that has anything to do with the comics aside. There were points where it went, really, guys? And it just seemed a little tacky. That's just a personal opinion. I'd give it like a five out of ten. But there was this whole thing
the whole time that we've been doing this where it's like, I'm like, well, this wasn't that bad. And you're like, no, the episode, you know, and it's just, and this was
but
really
no,
stupid.
Okay, as a series on its own, I have to say I also didn't like the last episode because I also felt that it took us out
of... But that's fine, but that's sort of where I also felt that if you want to get to the conversation point where we're talking about as a series, not as an adaptation.
But that's what I was saying before. Look, as an adaptation, I think it sucks, quite frankly. Okay, but as a series on its own, as I said, I will come back for season two. It didn't leave me by its
oh,
last...
Oh, it definitely didn't leave me.
Its last two episodes didn't leave me excited because I kind of feel like, as a series, it went into a territory where you sit there and go, I don't know if I needed the CDC. I didn't need explanations on, I mean, and it was predictable. It was badly written. The whole thing about patient 19 and the reveal of patient 19, knew it was coming.
Yeah.
You know, the whole the escape at the end and the black woman's fate. And you sit there and go, really? I just didn't care about her. You know, there was no character build up to her, so I didn't care about her. So there was no emotional loss to that. And as a series about characters and as about human survival, that's a failure. Because you kind of look at it and go, if I don't really care about the survivors, then how am I going to, you know, care about these people going on?
Why do we have to care about them all?
Because they've established them all as people in this group.
They've established them as people, and like
with long speeches,
10 lines in the whole series.
With long speeches from Glenn about we don't burn our own, we only burn the geeks. We've got to stick together, and all they're trying to make you feel
but
for this.
Do you have a feeling for him as a character,
Glenn? I do.
Yeah, exactly. That's
Glenn,
what
I care
saying.
About because Glenn.
Some of the ones you do, some of the ones are those people in the background, just like real life.
But here's the element. We set. What they've effectively done is set up people to be zombie fodder, right?
No, but like, I mean, like I've said in the Talking Dead cast, my reaction to that character was entirely different to you because I went, wow, I really knew nothing about her. And it's like, that is the exact same way it would be if somebody I knew, if we were in a situation, somebody that's been around the group, I might have talked to once or twice, but never really connected with because we just aren't the same kind of personalities. That person just goes off and goes, no, I'm going to go get eaten, or shuts the door and walks off, or just takes off in the middle of the night. You don't know anything about them. Every character doesn't have to have a fully fleshed background and storyline. Characters, people are people.
If
this
you're
is gonna, what it's
no,
saying.
I disagree. As a dramatic device, if you're going to make a big deal about her staying behind and keep cutting back to that room with Jenner and her in the room like it's a big deal, then we should have had some sort of connection with her prior to that scene so that we actually feel for that character. Because if we don't feel for that character, where's the drama? There's no drama to that scene because we don't care about them. We don't literally don't care about those two characters. We don't care about Jenner either because we never really find out anything about Jenner. So we needed her because we needed to care about her because we didn't have time to learn about Jenner. So we needed to feel something for her, and we don't. She's a non-event.
Well, I did, so.
Well, and that's to say, different connections happen in different ways. The problem is I found, like, when the Hispanic family decided they weren't going, I went, okay, bye. You know, didn't have any connection with that Hispanic family at all, you know?
Well, I mean, I was the same way in that, but that wasn't a negative thing for me. That was just that they've decided to stay. Fine, they go. People come and go. Like, I mean, I don't have to have...
I think all drama is based on reaction, though. When you have the reaction of the people saying, oh, my God, they're staying behind, we should be feeling... They're reflecting the audience. We should be feeling what they're feeling. And we're not feeling what they're feeling because we don't know the people that are leaving, you know? And I don't know. It's a personal opinion. I just look at it and go, as... When you're setting yourself up that big a cast... It's a
like,
very fine line you walk.
Come and go in this show.
Well, that's right. But you're setting up a very fine line because what you're doing is setting up zombie fodder. So when the zombies attack the camp and a whole bunch of people are killed,
you can pretty much guess who's going to
killed
get it.
Or leave or move in and out. Like, I mean, these aren't always the same situation.
Also,
like,
it cuts down the tension on the main characters, though, which you sit there and go, I know none of them are going to get killed because we have the fodder to be killed off. You know, we have the cattle to be killed off.
But at the same time, like, you also would have that even if they were the only ones there, because it's like those people are the ones that you're setting up. So it's like by having these characters going in and out, by opening up little pieces of storyline but not whole pieces of storyline, you aren't aware. You're always going to have your key players for now, right? This is a TV series and it's on basic cable and you've got producers behind it. You're not going to axe the inner circle of characters, not right yet. You're going to wait till season 2 or season 3 before you start taking out those people. Exactly, which you have to develop, which means you need characters in between that are going to go in and out. If you're just going to have 10 or 15 characters and you're not going
to
change up the order of things, then
you're
not going
to
have...
They have to keep it interesting for a cable TV audience. So
exactly, you've got to have people that are going to come in and out.
That's why it is so much lighter than the comic.
Yeah, I don't agree, because I think if you actually set up a base set...
Are you saying that every time that we have an attack of zombies, people are going to die? Are you going to say that we have to redo story?
If you make it incredibly unpredictable as to what or who is going to die at any given time, it puts an audience on edge, which adds to the drama.
No, but I think it's just a basic form of filmmaking is the reason why we don't have that problem. Because like at this stage, you know the comic books and you're going, these people aren't going to die. And we know that because it's a comic book adaptation. You already know who's not going to die. The rest of the people in the background, you don't know who's going to die. You only know them because they are introduced characters. They are people that are going to be zombie fodder. If we follow it to the line, you're never going to have a surprise at all. You're never going to have people die off at all because you're going to be like, and now such and such dies. Mm. Because you know everything because you've read every comic. And the whole point of it is it's a survival-based horror. And if we're going to have a survival-based horror, the same way we set up every zombie survival-based horror film, you have to have the characters that are going to die.
Also,
it's our fault for watching far too many horror films to know the rules of these things to
also,
make it work.
Also, they're bringing a survival-based horror to TV, might I point out. This isn't a film. This is a TV show. It's not even an HBO TV show. So stuff like Deadwood, The Wire, really intense, brutal shows.
And
now,
these
forget
are
about that. We're going to get a pre-planned, stereotypical, very light horror
drama.
For TV audiences.
Can you imagine
if
Deadwood...
It's not for your average zombie horror fan.
If Deadwood had have had a series, a comic series, before it came out, let's just say it's an absolutely faithful creation of the comic book, would anything in that have hit you hard at all? Because you would have known when people were going to die.
Yeah.
You would have known... No, because you would have known. There would have been no surprise in it because you would have known who was going to die and when.
But again,
I don't think. See, once again, this is the thing. I don't think it's about the knowing who's going to die. I think it's about the actual
survival horror.
I think it's about the actions of it. So if you get to know these people and these actors are, and the script is really well written, and those actors are really succeeding in those roles, you're going to care, even though you may know it's coming. It's like knowing a spoiler on a film. You may know, but you're feeling that emotion.
In Deadwood, that some of the best moments in that thing are the things that just take you completely by surprise.
That's right. And some of the best moments in the Walking Dead comic book are the things that take you completely by surprise.
And I think that would totally be wrecked.
But I think as an audience who didn't know the comic book, those surprises are enough.
Mm.
We didn't need to introduce new stuff.
No, but you're saying the ones that haven't read the comic book.
But what I'm saying is, whether you've read the comic book or not, at this point, there was enough in it to... I mean, we get to know those characters. We didn't need to introduce new characters to this. We didn't need to create fodder to be killed off. There was enough in there already for those surprises to happen, you know?
Yeah, all right.
You know, I just think we, by adding lots of characters, it's following Lost's formula of introducing more and more people.
Frame by frame in a film. Like, in a film-based situation, you've got a lot of people roaming around. You want to create a campsite. You can't have it with six people and just locked off cameras like this. You want the feeling that there's a collaboration of people in an area living together. And I think if we had had four or five people, it just wouldn't have felt like a commune. It wouldn't have felt
like
an
area. But
we're
not talking four or five people. We're talking about 10 to 15 people.
15 people,
you know?
Yeah. Okay.
And that could be made. And the smaller the group, the more...
And like when we're talking comic panels as well, if we're going to talk about panel by panel, it's like with the panel by panel, you're talking out individual scenes very quickly, right?
Almost
and
like
the storyline moves along very quickly. It's like you need a bit of kind of time for these people to live out on screen. It's like it's not just like one shot of somebody going like this. You need
sure, granted, but what I'm saying is I think that if you keep the group small and tight, 10 people or so, get to know
also,
those people
really
well.
Knocked off a bunch of people. We don't know if they're going to add more people in now. This is what I'm saying. It's like, you know, I think these are like little tiny individual
problems. I just feel like it's
problems.
Kind of the red shirt formula of Star Trek. It's like, you know, let's have a bunch of people in the background that we can kill those off and
which
that won't actually affect our cast.
It seemed, someone, Callison said kind of like red shirts. It's that sort of, if you know zombie horror, if you know horror, and you'd assume that's the kind of audience they're trying to bring in, but obviously not, then you'd know. Like, there were literally points in second and third episode where I could almost point out who was going to die.
No, you couldn't, because you didn't know any of the cast members.
Actually,
you said that.
Could.
Remember, in episode 3, you were like, who the hell is she?
And
we didn't
so,
know.
Yeah, so but,
I,
that, but that is
but
the key.
She was
you go, who the hell
who
is
she?
She's going to die.
Exactly,
that's right.
And she ended up dying, so
she
I was right.
She runs in front of like one shot and then gets attacked and
but
dies.
That's the point. If you see somebody that you don't know,
but it's about
that's
the
formula
of the scene of them coming up. If it's just them mandering up a hill and you've got six people that you know aren't going to die all standing there shooting them off, it doesn't become the same scene for me. It's the whole concept that as people, they have to deal with the next morning the fact that there are dead bodies, right? And if you only had your six characters, there'd be no dead bodies.
I'm not entirely sure I buy it. But anyway, that's once again, this is what makes film and television so wonderful, is it's all about opinion. And it's all about, and it provokes some very strong feelings in people as well. And you look at it and go, it's just a situation where, as a series, Josh got more out of it than I did. I still don't think you were completely overwhelmed by the series, but
no, I'm not.
You did get more out of it.
I think, yeah, I just think that, you know, it's it's the kind of series where it's like six episodes is not enough to set this up.
No, and I actually, I just kind of feel like, I guess my feeling was that after the pilot notwithstanding, I kind of felt like I've seen all this before. And that was really what it comes down to. I kind of felt like we're following generic formula television.
Yeah, I kind of
And I didn't want generic. I wanted something more original
for television. Yeah, but I kind of wonder what their target audience was, if it was your average person or if it was a horror.
They had to sell the series
I think it was their... I think their target was your average person, which is probably why it followed so many cliches, because your average person hasn't watched a lot of zombie horror films or read a lot of zombie fan fiction. So, yeah, it's going to be
also
a standard...
And also, when we pick up a zombie film, like... out of the thing, when we are in the mood for a zombie based thing, we will expect those particular things.
Exactly.
So for
you,
those people that are getting into
that.
This, like, I mean, that's the whole thing. I mean, it's being done from a producer's eyes, not from a director's eyes yet. Now, whether or not that's going to change over time, I don't know. It may end up being like Lost, where it's all about just holding off individual points and only giving you like one or two things a series. And if it does, it'll fail just the same way that Heroes does. We watched season one and it was individually good. I'm not comparing those two, but I'm saying season two was one of those things where, as fans, we were all waiting for it to get good, and we all sat through season two going, it's going to get better,
and it didn't,
and it didn't, and by season three everyone had stopped watching. And this is exactly what can happen with this. It's so close and teetering on the edge. It's just that,
see, that's a great example, because I loved Heroes.
Exactly. And wasn't it amazing that you sat through the whole of two and you just kept waiting
for something?
Because you've seen the first series and you know how they set things up, and you were waiting for those points to start arising where you were like, and things get good. And nothing did. And at the end of that season, you lost it completely.
And then they milked it for another two more seasons. You just didn't let it die. Yeah. You know, it's just like, let it go.
Exactly.
So yeah, I agree with you. And as I say, I didn't hate the show. You know, as a series, I just kind of felt like I'd seen it all before. You know, it's like, because I guess I've sat through six seasons of Lost. I've seen this, you know, groups of people and, you know, all this. And as I said on the Talking Dead cast, take the synopsis for Lost, replace Oceanic Flight with zombies, and you pretty much got the same plot that's going on right now. So I kind of, it just, I was a little disappointed that I was hoping for spectacular television, and it just didn't quite deliver for me. I will be back for season two. We'll see what happens in season two. You know, power to them. I hope something amazing happens. You know, but it'll be very interesting to see where we go. I know that Frank Darabont has signed on to continue as showrunner, which has lost him one of his producers because he didn't want to be second fiddle. He's moved on. So we'll see what happens. You know,
look, I mean, having him closer to the project and having one less producer may have a positive effect. It may have a negative effect. Like I said, we're sitting right on the borderline right now.
It's going to be very interesting to see next October where this series goes. For more detail on any of this, go listen to the Talking Dead cast and our wrap up of that. And I think I was a lone dissenter on that show, so we'll see how we go. All right, let's wrap this show up with our list of five. This is that list that we said was a horrific experience for us to try and create. And it's going to be very interesting because, Josh, I think you had an opinion on this.
Well, look, my opinion on my list is based entirely on the fact that, look, I don't think there is anything like... when I originally got the email, it seeded a comment in my head, and I didn't say anything at the time because I was like, yeah, I haven't thought enough about that. Now I have actually spent some time thinking about it. There are people out there, like directors, that are really good at cutting comedy. They're very good at bringing out race cards or something like this and doing it right on that line. And Mel Brooks is one of those people, right? Mel Brooks... people don't look at that comedy and go, that's offensive. They look at it and they're just like, that is ridiculous, right? And if I showed that to anyone nowadays, like, you know, a family member that might be of the religious descent or something like that, you can still see the comedy in it because no one's taking it seriously. And also there are always people involved in the scenes that are of the color or of the descent when they do Jewish jokes or when they do black jokes or whatever. They're taking the piss out of themselves as well, because the only way you can successfully do that is if you bring in someone of that class, of that style, that can get the joke. Because if they can't get the joke, then you've failed and you've offended someone. So it's always been that kind of a system. Now, I don't think that can't be brought out now. I think, yes, the internet has made it much easier to create a large voice against something, which means that people rise up against these sort of things. Do I think it couldn't happen? I don't think that's possible. I think there is always a possibility that you can walk that fine line. Like, I mean, Family Guy and South Park have walked lines much deeper and much more tactical than this. Yes, they are cartoons in their right, but in a lot of ways, Mel Brooks' films are basically
cartoons.
Comics.
They're walking live-action cartoons.
Exactly. They're basically live-action cartoons, which is why it works. It's that whole kind of, like, Jewish kind of shtick that you can only get away with if you know that kind of personality. And it's the reason that so many of the producers of these series usually are, because they understand how to walk that line so carefully. And that's why I actually couldn't come up with any for this list. What I've come up with is five films, me and Celine have come up with five films that I don't think you could redo, as in, like, I don't think people would let you. I think you would basically get too much of a rise for it to come out. Or the other thing is that I just don't think they could recreate the same feeling that you could. You could create a film, like we've seen it happen, and one of the things on my list is actually something that has had a remake, but I don't think you could ever have it released to cinema the same way. Mm. So that's my list.
And my list is actually only a list of, I'll throw in one more. I'll throw in the one from Katie, so I make it five. I actually only have four of my own, but I'm going to throw in one that Katie brought up just because it's a fair call in many ways, but I'm just going to say...
Mine's not in order this time. Usually my lists are in order.
Oh, no, mine's not in any order either. The lists of five aren't necessarily supposed to be in order. We do a five because it counts it down, but the whole concept was it's not a top five. Yeah. It's just a list of five. Now, I'm going to say right off the bat that after thinking about this and living with this goddamn topic for the last...
it's been in my mind for a good solid week.
Yeah, a good solid week. I'm going to say that I actually don't agree. I don't think there is a film in existence that can't be remade.
Yeah.
We've seen it time and time again
that it can happen and
be done
it'll
badly.
Just yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and it'll it will fail. Never and the problem with a remake, any remake, is it will never be the same film. Mm. You could remake Blazing Saddles but it would not be the same film.
But you can get close. Like, we've seen that with things like Let the Right One In and stuff like that. Sure. Let Me In and stuff like that. You can really emulate
but what they would do
a great job.
What they would do with a remake of Blazing Saddles today is they would make a remake of Blazing Saddles and they would make contemporary humor in place of the 70s humor, then they would make it a contemporary thing. Because, let's face it, the thing about made Blazing Saddles so politically incorrect at its time was it was made in the middle of the 70s. And there was a very 70s sensibility.
The question I have with this, though, is that did she mean remake it
or
with
a film like that
flair,
come out today?
Or could a film like that be released word for word exactly the same?
So in other words, if it hadn't existed and had it been dropped
in the past, if it had been dropped in this day and age in this time with these current views, would it be allowed? Would it be accepted by audiences?
I don't think it would be. Not Blazing Saddles.
It wouldn't. Definitely not.
But it's a very different
time.
Or
films like that.
So I've approached this as a concept. The only way I could approach this concept was to look at films that you just look at and go, because of time and place, the film as it stood could not be remade.
Mm. Yeah.
All of the films that I have listed, anything is possible. Mm. You could do a remake. Of course you could. Yeah. And as a prime example of that, I'm going to bring up a film that we reviewed on this show, which was The Taking of Pelham 123.
Yeah.
The Taking of Pelham 123 was an absolute time capsule of 1974. Yeah. The way they talked, the way they acted, the way they related to each other, the way New York actually was. And you just look at it and go, that was 1974.
Yeah.
They knew they could never recreate that film. So what did they do? They turned it into a completely contemporary heist movie today and completely said, we're not even going to try and emulate the 1974 Taking of Pelham. And that's how you make remakes. You just say, don't even try and copy it. Move on and do something completely different with it. Okay, that's fine. Hello. Oh, hello. Coming to wait. Stop.
Trailer.
Stop.
Cue trailer.
Stop. My computer has become self-aware. All right, so with that in mind, I've kind of looked at this list as saying films made in a certain time and place. Any film that I'm mentioning here, yes, it could be remade. Mm. Whether it would be the same film, not a chance in hell. There's no way it could be the same film. Mm. So let's approach it in that way for me. And we'll
The underlying thing in this is you can't recreate an era.
No.
Era is an era and it stands alone.
And it's interesting.
And you can't ever recreate that.
Absolutely.
No matter how faithful you are, you will always be looking at it from your contemporary eyes.
Absolutely. And that was a point that Josh and I were talking about before we started
recording
today.
And it will always be
today.
A comment on that era. It won't ever be that era truly 100%.
That's right. Like we were discussing at coffee just beforehand. I said Dirty Harry is a great example of a film where you sit there and go, Dirty Harry was 1971. It was It was a time and place. And you say, could you remake Dirty Harry? Of course you could. You could remake Dirty Harry tomorrow. And, of course, who would you cast as Harry? Probably somebody like Hugh Jackman or something like that. And you'd make Dirty Harry. However, it would not be the same film because what made Dirty Harry was...
it was the era.
It was the era. It was the language. And it was about a cop who didn't play by the rules.
Yeah.
Well, that's old hat now.
Yeah, exactly.
Every that's show and film now. Is about a cop who doesn't play by the rules.
And we look at that through our contemporary eyes with the experiences that we've had and the ideals.
And also what we've been brought up with. And what we've been brought up with, et cetera, et cetera.
And we look at something like Dirty Harry and we just go, yeah, okay, cool. It's we would be remaking Dirty Harry, we would be interpreting and commenting on that era.
Yeah,
we
and a
be
prime example was Shaft. Shaft was remade, but Shaft... Samuel L. Jackson style is nothing like Shaft 1970 style. Mm. He didn't have the same cool factor. He wasn't the jive talking turkey. He wasn't, you know, there just was no atmosphere to Samuel L. Jackson's Shaft. They remade it, but it was not the same movie, you know? Mm. So yes, I think she's got a point, which is there are films that are time and place. Mm. Could they remake Blazing Saddles? Yeah, I'm sure somebody's got it in the works, you know? Mm. But it will never be Blazing Saddles from the 70s. Yeah. And what makes it so inoffensive and the reason why we can watch Blazing Saddles is because we go, oh, the 70s, weren't they so silly? Mm. You know, and that's how we get away with
it. But at the time, no one thought it was silly.
Nobody thought it at all, you know? Absolutely. So all right, so let's kick through this. And I'll start off this time, and I'm going to say that my first two are actually about eras. But I've chosen one film to represent an era, okay? My number five is actually 70s blaxploitation. You can never recapture 70s blaxploitation. I mean, yeah, we make, you know, Tyler Perry's making films today, and so they're not the same thing. 70s blaxploitation was a kickback to an era. It was the Black Panther era. It was militant blacks. It was about, let's take back cinema from the man and the whole bit. So the film I've chosen as an example is Blackenstein. You're not going to see Blackenstein today.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's not the sort of film that they're ever going to make. And in fact, in some ways, it's actually quite offensive that the film even exists towards black people. You know what I mean? That's funny. You look back on their films that were supposed to be these militant films, and they're actually kind of racially insensitive to their own kind by looking at it in today's eyes. So, yeah, blaxploitation as a period, 70s period, I don't think could ever be remade. We go back and we watch those films as the time capsule that they are. So...
Number five on our list is actually a joint one, which was The Warriors. Look, I mean, The Warriors can be recreated as a concept. You could get a whole bunch of people together and have different clans and so on and so forth. It would never feel the same because there's a real feeling of everything that was that era, like 70s. There is that real feel, like the initial speech, which me and Celine both talked about, that concept. Number one, the actual saying, can you dig it, as she was saying. But also the idea of kind of this grouping together and going, we can be as a people. It's like now we look at that and they're like, why the hell can't we? You know, it's like, to us, that isn't an offensive concept, and it's not a strange concept. Like, we're not segregated
as a natural
thing. In a time
where the individual is...
Is basically out for themselves.
Yeah, look, a lot of things have been gentrified.
Omega and everything. Yeah, it's sort of, you know, that was a sign of its time. That was youth rising up against what was a really, really... a conservative culture. The 50s and 60s were so conservative, and we had the late 60s, 70s was such a time of change. That's why The Warriors stands up as such a great film. It was youth going out, being violent, doing what they weren't supposed to do, and it was about black people, white people working together, also not working together,
also
fighting.
It was also a kickback against the whole love each other 60s.
Exactly, yeah, and it was just like, love each other, fuck that, let's fight each other.
Well, and it was also that
it was
kind
really
of...
ballsy film for its time.
Exactly, and you weren't kind of sure of where it was trying to pretend that it was. Like, it could kind of be some sort of a future where we kind of just all ended up in gangs and sort of fought
or
each other.
Or it could be in that current time. Like, the time period when it was set's actually... quite skewed because they're all dressed so outrageously. It could be in the future, or it could actually just be the late 70s. You know?
Yep.
So, yeah.
Yeah, no, and I want to say, yes, Octane, I am actually aware that they are remaking this film.
Doesn't mean it's justified.
Yeah, exactly. No, more importantly, it won't be that film.
No, it won't be The Warriors.
Even if it
just
stands up on its
own. Just
because
you can remake something doesn't mean you should.
This is where I kind of agree with you guys on the whole concept of remaking something. It's like, it will be called The Warriors. It won't be The Warriors.
Yeah, it'll be called The Warriors. It'll be about street gangs. It'll be about them trying to get across town. That does not make it
the same
film.
Name. It may even have the same character name. So something like that. It doesn't mean... It won't be the same.
As an example, Assault on Precinct 13, the remake, is called Assault on Precinct 13. It's about an assault on a police station. It is in no way at all like the original film. Cool. It's in no way, shape, or form, you know?
Cool.
It's a remake in name only, so...
Your one.
All right, number four, once again, is a time period. And I'm gonna highlight that time period with the film Gremlins. Mm. And I'm going to say early 80s, late 70s Damn. Family films...
We'll talk this one out then, because I changed one of mine to that. So,
okay,
yeah.
Cool. All right, so we'll talk this out, and we look at it and go, we treat children like they're fragile today. We pander to them.
Yeah.
We release something like Gremlins, which has scenes of horror, which has scenes of people being killed and blood, and we sit there and go, oh, you know, that's a kid's film, rate it PG and throw it out there, and everybody loved it.
Yep.
They all raved on it. Now, as an era, we also had films like Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. A guy's heart gets ripped out. We have E.T. Now, E.T.'s a great example, because E.T. is a film where you go, we couldn't do that today, because we've already seen that on the anniversary edition, they went, oh, it's too politically incorrect, and digitally remove the shotguns and all that sort of stuff from the police officers. So you sit there and go... We just couldn't make that film today. We couldn't make all of that era of family-oriented films because we don't make films like that anymore.
Exactly.
You know? And so I say Gremlins is a great highlight of that.
Yeah.
Because you sit there and go, that is a film that would... That film would be rated M today.
Exactly. It would be rated M. It would probably be protested against and all this sort of stuff because it's violent and you're trying to show it to the children and stuff like that. It's, like, weird. It's, like, out of a society that was, like...
The closest we've got today is the Harry Potter films. And I remember when the third Harry Potter came out, and the parents lost their minds.
Yeah.
Because they're all sitting there going, why is it suddenly rated M? How are my kids going to go see it? And you sit there and go, you know what? Your kids can take it.
Yeah.
You know, your kids
you just need to harden the fuck up.
Yeah,
all
it's
right?
aimed at 12-year-olds. It's aimed at 12, 13-year-olds. Get them in there. They're going to enjoy it. It might scare them a little bit. You know what? Being scared sometimes is actually a good thing.
Yeah.
It's the adrenaline pumping. It's called. I tried to explain to Nikki. He goes, oh, but it's scary. I said, sometimes scary
is
exciting.
If you have no idea how to deal with scary, if you have never dealt with scary, then you will freeze up and you will end up somewhere.
Yeah, James from Melbourne.
And I'm not saying take your kids to go see Saw. That's ridiculous. But you know what?
No.
Some light excitement could be fun. You know? Let's get out there and enjoy them. All right, you're number four. We kind of talked that out. So
All right, cool. Well, our number three is Heat of the Night, which I will give to
Which
Celine
I hate you for because I would love to have put that on my list.
Yeah, no, it was, what, 65?
And the exact years are alluding
it's,
me.
It,
yes.
In the 60s. It's that racism that's okay but isn't okay. It's sort of, you do get that really haunting feeling from the other actors that they actually are racist.
Well,
and
there
that
was
it's
that,
okay to use the N-word.
Even if it wasn't, like, even if it wasn't that era or all the people on set were not necessarily against each other and obviously they worked together at least enough to make it a film, there's that feeling that it's at least, there's that almost taken abackness with every one of the white actors to the black sort of person,
like,
where
on,
it's that kind
here.
Of
yeah.
it's kind of, there is a little bit of resentment in every shot, and this it's just sweltering.
And a part of that is the fact that Rod Steiger's performance is brilliant
as
the racist sheriff. I mean, he's just brilliant. If you haven't seen In the Heat of the Night, and there's probably a lot of our listeners who haven't because it's an older film and people seem to have this aversion to going to see old films. In the Heat of the Night is
it's
one of those special
film.
Special films where you sit there and go, it is an absolute moment in time where the South was a powder keg of racism.
And also,
you know?
It doesn't... I mean, now when we look at racism in films, it seems like it's really over-exaggerated. It's really like we've got the Klan and they're burning crosses. And like, not saying that people like that don't exist. People like that
do exist,
which is really scary. But it's that subtle hatred for somebody that is there, and it's to the point where he's frustrated at them and they're frustrated at him.
In the case of Rod Steiger's character there, though, I don't even think it's a hatred. I think it is just a, I look down at you because you are a subhuman, you know? And when you've got the Sidney Poitier character turning up, who is an FBI agent and outranks him by miles, and is a city N-word to quote the film, he walks in and they keep calling him boy, and he's just taking it for like half the film.
He takes it for most of the film.
Until he finally turns around and delivers that line.
What makes it work so much better is the fact that there's that racism and hatred from him too. Like, I mean, I'm not saying it's not justified at all, but it is that inbuilt, and that's what's making the tension,
He sees them as redneck, ignorant rednecks, and they see him as this black who shouldn't, an insolent black who shouldn't be in his position.
Exactly.
And the friction,
exactly.
The friction
is
remarkable.
Even when there's no words, you can just feel it coming out of the screen.
And that's where you get that indication that it's not actually hatred, it's just that friction is where... Rod Steiger kind of finally buckles and says, I need your help
on
this. And you kind of go, and it's such a powerful moment because you kind of go, wow, he actually ate humble pie, came to the train station, and actually said,
In that scene, and this is why I'm saying it would never work like that, because the words would just fall short and your audience would just get really confused, because it's that feeling that neither of them apologize or say, it's okay, or let's do this.
Exactly.
It's just that, let's just get this done. And it's like,
I don't want to work with you, but we need to do
We need each other, and that's all there is
exactly.
to it.
And it's like, at the end of it, it's just kind of like that, I'll see you later. And, you know, like, there may have been a bit of smile and so on and so forth.
But
maybe there's a bit of effect, but it's that whole concept that at no point did things really change.
No. And you're right. It's an absolutely amazing film.
And I think if it were a remake now, it would be a caricature of racism, that it would be over-the-top racism, and there wouldn't be that underlying very real feeling resentment that these actors had for each other.
Somebody said they did remake it. James Melvin is saying A Time to Kill. No, it's a very different film. Very different plot, even.
Yeah.
Because the central core was not about he was wrongly accused.
Yep.
They were equals trying to solve a case. And that's
yep.
what made it such an interesting film.
Oh, yeah.
No, it's an amazing, amazing film. And it really is one of those films where if anybody attempted to remake it, it would fall flat.
Yep.
Because it's not... Yes, there is still there is still racism in the world, but it's not quite that powder keg.
And it's not so mainstream
it's
unacceptable.
It's not built into your actors either.
Yeah.
No.
So that changes the whole effect right there.
Like, these are actors who, they shot the film in the 60s. They'd grown up through the 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s. So they were racist people. That was socially acceptable at that time, and part of that society to look down on people of certain race. Now we don't have that.
Absolutely. All right, for my number three, I'm going to throw in, this is the one where I actually had a gap, and I'm going to throw in my lovely wife Katie's suggestion. Now, I'm not entirely sold on this concept, but I can see where she's coming from. Now, the concept that she's coming from is the film Gone with the Wind. Now, the reason why, you know, they've talked about remaking this film, and yes, we've made films that are, you know, set in the South and all that sort of stuff, but her point is, both the book and the original film, because it was made in 1938, that's a lovely sound. It's not actually what you think, audio listeners. It is actually the water
it's
cooler.
It's like 1,000 degrees in here. Come on.
Yeah. All right, we're gonna wrap this up, but basically her point was that all of the black characters in Gone with the Wind are portrayed in this stereotype, Uncle Tom's Cabin stereotype, and this is the same in the book, and you sit there and go, if you remade Gone with the Wind, you would actually be more, at this today's day, you would actually be more careful with those characters, and you would probably look for backstories, and you would treat them as, and so Gone with the Wind, as it stands now, would never actually happen today. You would actually make them sympathetic characters in the background, and you wouldn't have
You'd make them real people, you wouldn't make them over the top
stereotypes. No, that's right, and you wouldn't have that whole, I don't know how to birth child, Miss Laura, you know, and all this stuff, because you just wouldn't do that today. You wouldn't treat those actors in that way. And so Gone with the Wind stands as a time capsule of 1938, really, of the ideals there. Number two.
This one here is going to seem a bit weird, so let me explain it. I'm going to say Up. Now, when I say Up, I'm not talking about Up, the Pixar.
You're thinking of Russ Meyer.
I'm thinking of Russ Meyer's Up. Now, when
me off guard there.
When we talk about Russ Meyer's Up, for people that haven't seen it, and I would imagine that's a great portion of the world, and it should probably stay that way. Russ Meyer's Up is that kind of, what would you call it? It's not sexploitation. Is it sexploitation?
It's sexploitation.
Yeah, look, not only is it a mild, well, more than a mild, it's like borderline on a porno.
It's softcore sexploitation. Absolutely.
Exactly. It's everything else that's in that film. It's just like a giant collection of everything that insults people. It has racism, it has rape, and it's all looked at lighthearted. And if you watch this film, it's difficult to sit through.
I would actually say that you could encapsulate all of Russ Meyer's films in this comic. Use that as your
example. Yeah, no, absolutely.
But Russ Meyer's Faster, Faster, Pussycat, Kill, Kill, whatever it's called, Beyond the Valley of the Ultra Vixens. Yeah. I mean, they're all about big-boobed women.
Yeah.
And horrible, disgusting things happening.
Exactly, but like more than anything, Up is the worst thing because you've got sex scenes involving Hitler. You've got sex scenes involving Hitler. You've got weird kind of you've got a scene of rape where it's kind of like she deserved it is the overlining comment. Which seriously, as someone sitting in the audience, I was like, oh god, this is really
this
disturbing.
Is so not cool.
And then it's just got all these sort of scenes where it's like it's actually got got a line in it where it's like, why are you doing this to Hitler? He's not such a bad guy. That's a direct quote from this film. If you tried to even start remaking this film, you would have your set burnt down by someone. And it's just that whole thing where it's sort of, when you make something really guerrilla and really quickly and then throw it out, you can get things through classifications that probably shouldn't have been allowed.
So I think so far what we're seeing with these lists, and we've only got two more, well, we've only got, what, three more films to go in total, we can look at this and we can go, we're getting the kind of idea here, which is there are certain movies that were of their time, and just leave them at that.
Oh, yeah.
Don't try. My number two on this is Billy Jack. And if anybody hasn't seen Billy Jack, it's basically about the loner kung fu guy who basically is part American Indian who protects the hippie commune from the evil redneck townsfolk.
And you sit and go, so this Steven Seagal.
Yeah, I was about to say. Well, it sounds a lot like the Patriot.
Steven Seagal kind of really wants to be Billy Jack, I think. And, you know, the guy who played Billy Jack also wrote and directed the film. And, you know, it was just this complete hippie film. And it's all about the hippie communes and flower power and love. And he's, you know, oh, you've got to be nice to these people. And, you know, and it's so, and it's awful. I mean, the film is just awful. But it is also a complete moment of time. Yeah. You would never be able to get away with doing Billy Jack today. A, we don't have hippie communes, because anytime you have a hippie commune now, it's considered a cult. You know, so
people start worrying, people are going to start drinking red cordial and not coming
exactly.
back.
So the whole idea of the peace and love and brotherhood and everything else of Billy Jack is just completely out of date. Yeah. And it just wouldn't happen today. So, and Zed says Blazing Saddles. Well, that's the film that actually started the whole thing. So we're purposely not putting that on the list. Your next one?
My last one is actually Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And the reason that I'm saying this, even though it has already had a remake, is when I watched the original and people came up to me and went, hey man, you know, like, what do you think? You know, what did you think of the remake? I said, that wasn't Texas Chainsaw.
No.
That was a guy running around with a chainsaw. It may have had some similarities, but the thing that makes Tobe Hooper's movie so incredibly disturbing is the fact that
it's what happened behind the scenes.
And it's also, but it's also not just behind the scenes. It is about mood.
Yeah,
Tobe Hooper's film is disturbing to look at, and yet there's nothing really disturbing happening.
Exactly, it's all locations, about locations, it's sets, it's shots, it's as me and Celine both know. If you watch some of the, if you read up on the special features behind this, the scene where she is being chased down the hallway by him with a chainsaw is incredibly scary because that mask didn't fit properly. It was hot. The guy's delirious.
He couldn't see. He was suffering from heat stroke. He couldn't. The chainsaw was a real chainsaw, so it was heavy. When she's running and screaming for her life, she's running and screaming for her life.
And this scene where they're at the weird family dinner, which is all really disgusting and vile and all the strange parents. Apparently it was like 4 billion degrees in that room.
Yeah.
All the latex and real like
started
guts and
melt.
Everything were all starting to fester.
Yeah.
And basically the look of disgust and all the horror and filth and all the, they all were really feeling nauseous. They all really felt like they were going to throw up at that point.
Exactly.
And it creates a mood. All that heat that you feel is real. They shot it in these really hot Texas weather.
Yeah.
And they were just dying out there, you know?
And it seems that a lot of these films were budget films. They were films where they couldn't afford to have the actors go off set and in a lovely air-conditioned room, or people were underpaid, or people were pulled off the street, or they weren't real actors.
Yeah.
It's that rawness to underground films of an era that creates
these really underground
undertone to it.
Gems of films that get remade with these Platinum Dunes type budgets, you sit and go, you missed the point.
Exactly.
You
it's
completely
about the fact
missed
that
the
they
point.
Had no money, no actors, no special effects, and everyone was stinking in their own sweat.
And you'll get things like real tensions between characters that are supposed to hate each other because, number one, they're trying to push that feeling, but they're all hot, overwhelmed, and they probably didn't like that person.
Yeah.
And that comes through in just violence towards people. And it's things like that only work when you're shooting it in a particular way. Hmm. And that's why it never works on
And we just
like
don't
Platinum
make
Jones.
Films like we used to.
No, we don't. And that brings us to my last one, which is, of course, Life of Brian. Now, there's two reasons why you could never remake this film. A, first of all, there is no other Monty Python. If you don't have Monty Python, you ain't going to be able to do this film. Second reason is you would be hung up by your testicles by the religious right.
Yeah.
This film
Vatican
just squeaked
to your
in.
House.
Yes, it just squeaked in prior to the Last Temptation of Christ days when people started to lose their friggin' mind over this. Today's atmosphere, you would never get away with the humor that is in the Life of Brian.
Yeah.
So it was a moment, a flash in the pan, and it's never going to happen again.
Mm.
And so to even attempt something like redoing a Monty Python film would be insanity. So, and once again, this comes to the other thing, which is moment in time and the talent involved, right? You'll never be able to remake Bedazzled. Yes, I know they did, but that wasn't a remake. You'll never be able to remake Bedazzled because Peter Cook and Dudley Moore are dead. And they were what made Bedazzled. Brendan Fraser couldn't save that film. You know, it's not the same film. All right. That's it. That's our list. We hope we answered some of the questions that were posed by that list. I don't know if we quite succeeded in what she was saying, but hopefully we kind of got there.
Maybe she can let us know.
Let us know. If you agree or disagree with anything we had to say on today's show, send it to feedback@geekactually.com or drop us a voicemail, 02-801-13167. It's a Sydney number. And as we said at the beginning of the tech show, and I don't think we said it at the beginning, next week is our last show for the year. So please be aware that we are going to do a film show next week and an after show. There's no tech show next week, so it's just a film show and an after show, and that will wrap us up for 2 weeks, and then we come back and the tech show and the after show will be rolled into one show. So it'll be two shows next year, which should be a lot of fun. This show has gone much longer than expected, but we had a lot to talk about, so we're going to get out of here pretty fast. Remember, Twitter, Facebook pages, merchandise, donations, anything you want to do, just go to geekactually.com. It's all there on the front page. You can find it all out there. Follow us in all those various formats. Josh, give us a quick rundown.
Raw DLC, it's a gaming website. Go see it. It's really, really good. We have a live show. We're taking 3 weeks off. We'll be back at the start of the year. We'll talk to you more about that then. Bye.
Fantastic. And we'll also give quick plugs out to our very good friends over at The Real Junkies, R-E-E-L Junkies. Find them on iTunes or at their website, weekendronin.com. And I have to say right now, because they said it on the show, just to prove that I do listen to them, Greg, I love you too, man. All right, so there you go. And we also want to throw out Jesse and Brad and Charlie. And I also want to just throw out a really quick one. I don't have any details, so I don't want to even go into it, but I just want to say get well soon, Brad.
Okay? Yep, absolutely.
That's there at the Movie Fan House.
We hope you're doing well, man.
Absolutely. MovieFanHouse.com is where you find out all about the Movie Fan Cast, Right This Instant, or the Talking Dead Cast that we talked about before. And that's it. We're done. Cool. We're going to get out of here. Just remember, next week is our final episode, and it's Tron Legacy, baby. All right? As we said last week, we're going out with a piece of music from Tron each week, building up to the show. This is no different. We have a piece of music called Clue. This is from the Tron Legacy soundtrack. In the meantime, go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies, and we'll see you all next week. Bye. Thank you, guys. Bye.